morning. Last week we discussed the concept of a pshara. So as we explained, a pshara is not just the question of Bezdin splitting the baby. There are rules to a pshara. Just because you sign and give the Bezdin the authority to make a pshara does not mean that they will. It's only under specific circumstances where there's either a shvuah that they will be mafasher for, that can be mafasher l'man hashalom. Sometimes the Bezdin will be mafasher also if there are sveikus that they cannot be mavar, or if there is a yashus or a lefnim mishuros hadin on one particular side. And when a person accepts pesher karev ledin, so there the Bezdin's authority, their discretion is more limited. The Shvus Yaakov says karev ledin means it has to be within a third. So if al pi din, the person's chayav of $10,000. So based on the various factors for pshara, Bezdin can either reduce that or perhaps even increase it by up to a third. But that's their limitation. You're limiting the Bezdin's discretion. Regardless of what the factors are, they cannot veer, they cannot go more than a third off the din in either direction. Now, when a person signs for pshara, the halacha is that a normal din Torah, the way it works is you have the din Torah, you go back and forth, and dayanim vote, and achi rabim lahatos. If two dayanim say chayiv, one say pater, the halacha is you're going to be chayiv. You do best of three. You go by the majority. This is only true in the context of din. When it comes to pesher, because you're not dealing with a din anymore, it's not in a sense it's not a regular psak din. When you're kabul people to be mafasher, the mechaber brings down b'yeshayimrim. You need a unanimous decision. All three dayanim have to agree that this is a fair pshara. If only two agree, if there's a machlokes, what the pshara should be, the Bezdin cannot impose a pshara. Now, because of this, today, especially when you're dealing with a zabla, where each party picks a bayir, the two bayirim together choose a third independent shlish. So what will happen is, if the Bezdin decides to be mefasher, that in favor of one particular party, there is always a chashash that the boyer for the other party will refuse to go along, he'll refuse to sign. So a standard clause that is put in all the shtari brura and all the arbitration agreements are that even for pshara, the parties accept and allow the Bezdin to make be mafasher with two dayanim. You do not need all three dayanim. Now there's a fascinating discussion which we're just going to touch upon, is what happens if a person makes a pshara. He's tevea someone $10,000, he goes to the din Torah, he realizes his evidence is lacking, and he may lose. So instead of going to the end and hoping that he'll prevail, he's mefasher, he cuts a deal with the person, he accepts 50 cents on the dollar, and they settle. Later on, he finds better evidence. He goes through his records, he finds he has a promissory note, he has documentation, he has an email, and now he wants to undo the pshara. So here we have an interesting situation. In a case where there was evidence that was lacking, so there would be considered a pshara b'toyus. You only accepted 50 cents on the dollar because you could not prove that the fellow owed you the money. Now that you have the evidence, it's a pshara b'toyus, you have the right to undo the deal. Even though there was a heskim, even though you were makabel kinyan, you can retract the pshara, and you can go after the fellow for the entire amount. But this is only when there was a toyus. The person owed you the money, he denied it, you simply couldn't prove that you were right, now you found evidence. On the other hand, sometimes you have a dispute, you have two partners, something happened, and they're fighting over responsibility. And there's a suffix in din. So instead of fighting to the end, you don't know who will win and who will lose, you cut a deal. Afterwards, you sit down, you go to a shir, you go learn through Hilchus Shutfim, and you realize that you would have prevailed on the din Torah. There, the halacha is different. Because what's every pshara? Pshara is essentially a mekach u'memkar. There's a risk. You might be right, you might be wrong, you don't know, he doesn't know, nobody knows. So instead of going through the din Torah, hearing the tzadim and having a dayan decide who's right and who's wrong, you decide to cut your losses. You sell your claim for 50 cents on the dollar. It's a settlement. So in that case where you settled because of a suffix in din, the fact that now you determine what the din is, that's not called a toyus. That was a settlement, that it was a fair settlement, and you can't retract. It's only in the first case where there was a factual matter which you could which you simply didn't have evidence, and you settled simply because you couldn't prove what you knew was true, in that case, once you now found the evidence, that's called a toyus, and you have the right to retract. Masha Einkein, when nothing really changed as far as the facts, it's just beforehand you didn't know the halacha, or you were afraid that Dayanim would disagree with you, and therefore you settled. Now the fact that you figured out what the halacha would be doesn't change the fact that this was a settlement, it was a nekach memkar in a sense. You basically bought, it was kedai to you to take the 50 cents instead of risking losing the dollar, and there you would not be able to back out. Now there's a similar discussion about a pshara b'oinus, where essentially the fellow owes you money, and he basically threatens you, I know that I owe you the money, but I'm not ready to pay. And if you're going to have to chase me to Beis Din, I'm going to go to a zabla, I'm not going to come, I'm going to dreyakov, I'm going to hire this tayin, it'll schlep out for years, then there's a psak, I'm not going to listen to you. So instead, you're better off, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 50 cents on the dollar, and let's settle. So in that case as well, there's no suffik, it's not a mekach u'memkar over there, that is, no, just extortion. So in a case like that, even though you settle, even though you're makabel kinyan, you sign a waiver, if you're able to prove to the Beis Din that you were forced to do it based on this kind of threat, based on this kind of extortion, even though you settled, even though there's an agreement, you'd be able to come to Beis Din afterwards, overturn the settlement, and go after the full amount. Because again, that's a case where it was extortion, there was no suffik, there was no mekach u'memkar, it's just a one-sided forcing a person to waive rights that he was certainly entitled to. Well, it depends. If you, they'll go to the Din Torah, and if he's right on the entire amount, he'll get the full amount. Now, it's more than that. Even if there's a suffik, you know, Zetra with the Pshara, if there's a suffik, whenever there's a settlement, and you want to say that it was an oinus. So there's a difference in Simon Reish Hei between Toyu V'yohev and Toyu V'zavin, which means if someone pulls out a gun and says, sell me the field for $10,000. Now let's assume it's a fair price. If you sell the field, you accept the money, it is very hard to undo the deal afterwards. Because there's a concept of Agav Zuzi Gomer Omaki. L'maisa, you got paid. Now it's true you weren't looking to sell the field, but there was a gun to your head. You got fair compensation for it. So when a person is facing this situation, agav zuzi gam remakin. Now it's certainly also to do it. He's a chamos, but the deal is done. Unless he's moister moida. Ma'ashenkin by a matano. If someone forces you to give a present, there it is much easier to undo it. The gun might be to your head, but you're not giving it away. You're just telling the fellow take it because otherwise he'll shoot. But afterwards you can undo the deal. When a person is mefasher because of an oinus, because of a threat, you would have to determine whether this is a matana or a mecha. And the difference would be is that if there was a real suffik, if there were real tzadim on both sides, and it's questionable who's wrong and who's right, so that's a mecha. Because now that this is a settlement, you're giving up your claim, but in exchange, you're getting a certain amount of money which you may or may not have been entitled to. So to you, the zavin, unless you're moisim ma'idah, you're not going to be able to undo. Ma'ashe ein kein, if there are no two tzadim, this is just extortion, it's clear that you're right, and the other person is just forcing you to settle, that's to you, v'yohiv, that's a matana, and then you'd have the right to undo it. In practice, it is very hard to establish that it's a to you, v'yohiv, because as long as the person brings up any legitimate suffix, it has to be. He doesn't have to prove that he'll win. He just has to prove that there's a legitimate suffix, then it'll be a tayu v'zovin, and you would not be able to back out. So again, assuming the compensation is somewhat fair.
What if Newton says, I don't have money, but if you sell 50 cents
on the... Okay, excellent. So where is he getting the 50 cents from? If he has 50 cents on the dollar and he says, listen, you know, I have the money, but I'd rather spend it on other things. So that's extortion, because al pi din he has to pay his bal chayv. However, and this is a very common case, a person borrows money, and itaka, he's bankrupt. He has no money. He has a relative, and the relative says, listen, go around to your creditors, and anyone who's ready to settle for 50 cents on the dollar, I'll put up the money. I'll lend it to you, and you'll pay me back whenever. Now, in that case, that's not extortion, because al pi din, the loyev is doing everything that he could. He has no money to pay, so what do you want from him? Okay. So Elamai, there's a relative that's willing to bail him out at 50 cents on the dollar. So either accept the offer or decline it. That's up to you. That's not, there's nothing you don't shalik it in. It's only when the person has the money. But he says, listen, I have the money, but I don't want to give it to you. You know, go chase me. So it, we'll have to look. Okay, so we'll have to look. So what we'll have to look at is, Al Pi Din, does this money that he has, does he have to pay it to you or not? If Al Pi Din, he has to pay it to you, he has to liquidate his holdings, he has to sell off his, Al Pi Din doesn't force him to do that. Then him telling you, I'll only do what I have to do Al Pi Din, if you settle, that's extortion. That's tell you of Yahav, and that you can undo. My Sha'enkin, if he's willing to do above and beyond what is required to in halacha, he's going to borrow money from someone. Al Pi Din, it's very likely he doesn't have to borrow money from people. It may even be also for him to borrow money if he has no way to pay them back. But if he's willing to do something which Al Pi Din he's not obligated to do, that's a pshara, that's a settlement, and then you would not be able to undo it. Now, the last case that you mentioned gets problematic, where he has a limited amount of funds, and Al Pi Din, he really should be dividing it to everyone, either prorated or whatever the formula will be. And he basically tells you, I'm willing to pay, give you Kadima over the other people if you settle. Because certainly Al Pi Din, he doesn't have to give you Kadima. I would say more than that. Al Pi Din, it's probably also for him to give you Kadima. But the reality is you're getting more money than you would than Al Pi Din you're entitled to. And therefore, perhaps, even though the loiva shouldn't be doing it, but for the malva to undo the deal afterwards, he wouldn't be able to because he got more out of the settlement than he should have gotten Al Pi Din. So this is the basic, this is the concept of pshara. So now I'd like to spend the rest of the shiur talking about the actual procedures and process of a din Torah. So the first halacha in Simon Yudayin is b'tzedek tishpaydes amisecha. A bez din has an obligation to treat both parties equally. They cannot show any favoritism or treat one party better than the other. They have to treat both parties, they have to be equally friendly to both of them. The Gemara's example is you can't, so one of them give a big greeting. You know, one person comes in, you just say hello to him. The other person comes in, you start telling him, oh, Yanko, how's your brother doing? Regards to your parents. If you start showing that you're friendly to one party over the other, you're going to be seisim tainosav. The other person is going to feel intimidated. He's going to feel that the deck is stacked against him, and he will not be comfortable making his arguments in front of the Beis Din. So you have to treat both parties equally. Now, of course, you have two choices. You could either be friendly and courteous to both parties, or you could be equally rude to both parties. Halacha does not show a preference for one mahalach over the other. The point is simply you have to treat them the same. Now, this goes so far as the Gemara's example is, if you have a din Torah, one fellow comes in with banged up, ripped jeans. The other fellow comes in with his $1,000 custom suit. So we have a problem. The person, the ani who comes in very poorly dressed will feel intimidated. He'll say, I'm sitting there in front of fighting this fellow who's dressed to kill. I don't stand a chance. The Bezdin is not going to listen to me. So therefore, the halacha is, Bezdin tells the fellow with the $1,000 suit, you have two choices. Either you go out and buy yourself a pair of ripped up jeans, and that way you'll come in the same, or you lend your baldin a nice suit, and that way you're coming in on equal footing. Now, this, although this is the halacha as in the Gemara, the Sma points out that this is true only, you know, it's like this. Bezdin doesn't have to, whenever there are two baledinim, Bezdin doesn't have to call them up and ask them, you know, can I look at your tie and start figuring out this tie was $20, this person's tie was $40, we have to switch ties. The case is only when one person walks in with begadim muvuzim, he's an ani, it's ripped up, it's ragged, something which is a bezayim. So there, if you, one person to walk in like a, looking like a shlamazel, and the other person wearing begadim chashuvim, there he's intimidated. But if they're both wearing nice begadim, the fact that one is somewhat nicer or more chashuv than the other, this limitation does not apply. The Shach quotes Ravon on the other extreme. He says, if one person has a nice baguette, he says the halacha is only when one person walks in with a baguette of mea mana, worth 100 mana, a huge amount of money. Masha'en Kain, he says, today, even people who wear nice begadim don't walk around with such expensive begadim, and he says, therefore, when they're not so far apart, it's just stam a nice baguette, this halacha does not apply, And again, the Shach brings down the what they did today are not noihig to be zohir on this. Now, this idea of treating the party separately, equally, applies also as far as sitting and standing. The Bezdin cannot tell one party to stand, the other party to sit. Either they both, Pidin, they both should be standing. The minhag today is to allow both of them to sit. The point, again, is that both of them should be treated equally. In addition, Bezdin cannot tell one party to be makatza. It's getting late. We don't have that much time. Just give us the basic outline. We don't have time for you going droning on and on and on. Bezdin doing that is being slaysed to Tanoisev. If the person sees that when the first person spoke, Bezdin didn't interrupt, they had patience, they let him speak as long as he wanted, and now when he's speaking, the Bezdin is being more abrupt and saying, we don't have time, so you'll be slaysed to Tanoisev. You're going to intimidate the person, he will not be able to fully argue his position, and you will not be Makayim Mitzedek Tishbay Desam Yisach. You could tell both parties to be makatzer, or also the Achrayim speak out. If one party speaks and he gets the point, he says his argument and he sits down, there's no need to tell him to be makatzer because he was makatzer. The other person gets up and he just drones on and on and is repeating himself again and again and again. Here, this limitation does not apply. Here, a Bezdin could say, you know, we heard the story four times. Now it's time to move on to the next point. Now, in practically speaking, this becomes a very difficult issue, because when a Baal Din comes in and just goes in and he feels like starting the story from the beginning, he speaks slowly and is repeating himself again and again and again. If a Bezdin cuts him off and then he loses the Din Torah, he walks away with this feeling that, you know, I didn't have a chance to say to really explain my position. So it's something which Bat Din are very careful about, because people, if you don't let them say everything that they have on their mind, they will walk away with this fear. The Bezdin didn't hear them out. The Bezdin had made their decision before they had a chance to fully present the case, and it makes it more difficult to enforce the Psak Din. On the other hand, the parties are paying for the time, and you let a person go on indefinitely, you're being mafsid the other person money. So in general, but they didn't err on the side of caution. They generally will allow, at least within reason, they will allow a person to be ma'irich even more than is absolutely necessary, because it is, in the long run, it is better for both parties, because it is easier to enforce the psak. Now, one thing I will tell you, if you're in a Bezdin, and the Bezdin is being abrupt, they're just, okay, enough, move on. What it probably means is the Bezdin already decided that you're right. Because if Bezdin knows that you're right, they can afford to be a little bit harsher, a little bit more abrupt. There's no reason to waste people's time. At the end of the day, when you get the psak, you realize that Bezdin didn't need to hear more, and therefore they will be quicker to put their foot down. On the other hand, if Bezdin feels that you're wrong, then already they will probably allow you to go on. They'll cut you a lot more slack and allow you to speak much more ba'arichos, because they don't want a situation where they will paskin against you, and then afterwards you'll have tainas that, okay, of course I lost. They didn't even let me get out my side. So, again, I don't know if it's always true, but it's a good klal to know that when you do get cut off, it is probably a good sign. So there we have an issue. We'll get to that at the end of this year. The halacha is that if Bezdin sees that a person is right, there are two general concepts. What happens if a person comes to a Din Torah, they say the story, and the fellow at the end of the story says, therefore, I think you owe me $1,000. Now Bezdin, after hearing the stories, realizes, no. Not only the person doesn't owe you $1,000, he owes you $10,000. So on one hand, there's a concept of Hashavas Aveda. You're owed $10,000, you don't realize it. Bezdin should say, listen, Bezdin should pass, and you get $10,000. On the other hand, there's a concept of Al Tihika Orche HaDayanim. The Bezdin Dayanim's job is not to be everyone's lawyer, and they're not supposed to help the litigation. It's the party's responsibility to say their thing. So when do we say Hashavas Aveda or Psach Picha L'Ilem, a similar concept, and when do we say Al Tihika Orche HaDayanim? So this is a machlokes. The bottom line is that if Bezdin sees clearly there's a mistake, the person's entitled to $10,000, he doesn't realize it, he doesn't know about it, then the place can say Bezdin has to paskin that he's entitled to $10,000, even though there was no such claim. Bezdin can paskin more, they can award more than what the party has asked for. However, However, that's when it's clear there's a mistake. When there is a suffix, when Beznit is not sure whether he's asking for $1,000 because he knows he's entitled to more, but he was moichel, he's mavato already, he likes the fellow, he doesn't want to push it, he made a decision to be mavato, then already Beznit doesn't get involved, Beznit just passes on the $1,000. When there's a suffix, or what to do bistam, is a tremendous machloikas achroinim. Many achroinim say that before a person goes to a din Torah, they do all the due diligence. And if he's asking for $1,000, he probably means he realizes he's entitled to more, and he made a hachlota just to be mevater and to ask for $1,000. That's what the Beznit should paskin. However, it's machloikas. The Tumim says it depends whether he's an Aretz or a Talmud Chacham. But what we do see is that if a person is right, he just can't get out the words, Beznit will still paskin based on the merits of the case, not on the arguments that the particular person said. But Beznit has to be careful, because alti karcha dayanim, the moment they start taking one person's side, then already the fellow may have been a Dale Carnegie graduate, but if he sees the Beznit is jumping in and putting words into the other person's mouth, helping out his claims, then you will be seisim tanoisov, and that will be problematic. So the concept exists, but it has to be used very sparingly. Now, another example of being seisim tanoisov, and this is actually extremely relevant, is what happens if one person comes to a din Torah and he's fighting with two or three partners. So on one side of the room, you have this one fellow, and the other room, the other party fills up the Beznin with two, three, four people who are all arguing their side. So it's a 2-on-1, it's a 3-on-1, it's a 4-on-1. The halacha is, the one person has the right to say that it's intimidating for me to have to argue, to take on this whole partnership. So I want to deal with you 1-on-1. So either you could represent, take one partner and let him represent everyone. If you're not comfortable doing that, each person wants to represent themselves, no problem. We'll do it one at a time. Yankel will come in, for partner A will come in, and I'll have a din Torah with him over his share. Then he'll leave, the next partner will come in, and I'll have a din Torah with him over his share. And each of you will have a chance to talk, but it will be a 1-on-1. I don't want to be outnumbered, I don't want to be intimidated. The halacha is, he has the right to make such an argument. Now, taking this a step further, the same is true if a person wants to bring an advocate for him, with him. Two people have a machlokes. One of them says, I want to bring in a tayin, I want to bring in a lawyer, I want to bring someone who will talk for me, who will be mechazik me. The other person has the right to say, no, I don't want to be intimidated. I'm willing to take you on 1-on-1. But once you bring in someone else, then already it's unfair. I will not be able to articulate my position. Now, what happens if the person says, okay, if you're going to be intimidated on a 2-on-1, you bring your own time. It'll be a 2-on-2. So here as well, I'll pidin, you have the right to object. Because you can say, your time, your advocate is more shrewd or more cunning than my friends. And therefore, it's not fair. I have my dispute is with you. The two of us should be in the room and nobody else. Al pi din, this is a clear right that either party has to insist, I don't want anyone extra in the room who is not actually a baal din. If the person insists on having a tayin, what he could do is he could make the tayin into a mersha, and you can send only the tayin to the Beis Din. And that way, essentially, the tayin will be the baal din. It'll be a 1-on-1. But then the baal din himself would not be able to be there. But for the baal din to be there and bring a second person with him, there the other party has the right to object. Now, in practice, batei din do not enforce this halacha, for the very simple reason that for an arbitration agreement to be upheld in court, one of the basic rights that is not waivable is the right to representation. That in civil courts, you always have the right to have an attorney, to have someone represent you. If an arbitration panel says, come to us, but you are waiving your right for representation, then the award will not be confirmed by court. It's against public policy. And therefore, it is for everyone's ta'elis to allow ta'inim in order so that the ultimate psak will be enforceable. Again, that being said, halacha certainly is sensitive to this problem and to the in fact that a stranger there could intimidate a party, but in practice there's little a Beis Din can do to enforce this, and if they do try to enforce it, if batei din do try to say no tayinim, ultimately it hurts both parties because the award is not enforceable. There is one Beis Din that has a bit of a creative way of dealing with it, and what they do is they allow representation, but only by a licensed attorney. They will not allow Tayanim into the room. And this way, bidinehem, the fact that you allow a licensed attorney, courts also, you can't bring in a talyan necessarily, you bring in an attorney. So they're allowing representation and they are eliminating talyanim, so you don't have to deal with with problematic talyanim. It's a nice idea. But be that as it may, that is why, even though al pi din, a party has the right to object to a tayin, in practice, because the word will not be enforceable, in practice, but al pi din will allow tayinim. There are few exceptions, but you just should realize that although it might sound good, bottom line is you will not be able to confirm the award in court. As far as the actual din tayir itself, the process. So interestingly enough, al pi din, when a person comes to a din Torah and says, you owe me $10,000, all he has to say is his claim. You owe me $10,000. Not only is there no discovery, you don't even have to explain why. Whether you borrowed money from me, you smashed into my car, you just make a claim. You owe me $10,000. And al pi din, the person can just say, no, I'm potter. That's al pi strict din. Nevertheless, the Rambam and the Rosh both say that Beis Din makes a person be mevarer tainus. They make him explain the tainus. But there are actually two different reasons. The Rambam says the reason for that is we're afraid the person made a mistake. It's very nice you're claiming the fellow owes you $10,000, but A, you are not a dayan, you don't know choshen mishpat, so you may be incorrect as far as your halachic analysis and your karev et al atzmai. And therefore, Beis Din will ask questions or make him explain exactly what happened because we don't trust his claim alone. The Rosh adds another reason, and that is we are afraid of Ramoyim. Today, we unfortunately have many dishonest people. So if all you had to do to initiate a din Torah is say, you owe me $10,000, you didn't need to explain anything, that opens itself to abuse, to a Ramai, and therefore we make the fellow be Mavar Tainosav, we make him explain what the basis for a claim is, what happened, and what his claim is based on. Certainly, but we do see, although based on the Rambam of the Rosh, Beis Din will make him be Mavar Tainosav, we see that concept of discovery is not really an inherent right to a Din Torah. Because al pi din, or the real tzur of a Din Torah, is just a claim, a response, without going through the Shach V'Tarya. And in fact, if a person claims there are documents, he wants to subpoena documentation. So over here at the end of Siman Tezvav, the right is very limited. It only works when there's a Tainas Bari. If you just say this fellow might have documents there are documents that might show evidence in my favor, you cannot force a person to show the documents. Even when there's a Tainas Bari, you say, I know for sure he has a document that has evidence that will help me, you cannot force the person to give it over to you. You can force the person to show it to Beis Din. Beis Din will review the documents in camera. They will review it on their own to determine whether, in fact, there are points here that are relevant to the case that give the other party rights, in which case they will copy over that part that's relevant to the other party and show it to them. But the idea of that simply because you have a dispute, you can now go through all their bank statements, you can go through their private documentation, that does not exist in halacha. Now, in truth, how could you have a din? What's the pshat in this? How could you have a din Torah without any discovery? How could you have a din Torah where a person just says, you owe me money without explaining it? So in truth, this really brings out the fact that dinei Torah back then were drastically different than they are today. If you look at the tshuvas that describe dinei Torah, the biggest discussion generally is there a chiyuv shvuah? Who has a chiyuv shvuah? Is it shvuah d'oraisa or shvuah d'rabbanan? Because the primary tool in a dispute to figure out what happened and who owes who money was a shvuah. Parties would come in. If you have edus about what happened, good. But it's rare to have edus. Sometimes there's a fight, there's a chazakah, there are migus. Okay, good. But that's also fairly uncommon. What typically happened is if one person said one story, the other person said the other. So there's a chiyush shvuah that is mutl on one of the parties. You hand the fellow a sefer Torah, or again, it depends, shvuah d'oraisa, shvuah d'rabbanan. And at that point, people were extremely scared of making a shvuah shekah. So at that point, the shvuah was the primary tool that Beis Din had to determine who's telling the truth and who's lying. Based on that, if that's what you're relying on, so if a person says, you owe me $10,000, and the person said, no, I don't, it's not so important for Bezdin to start asking questions, because the way Bezdin passed him was not so much playing detective or interrogating the parties. The way they passed him was, if he's ready to make a shavua, and he swears that Yutaka owe me the money, then he's going to win. Or if the person's ready to make a shavua that he's potter, again, depending on the case, so if he's ready to make a shavua, he's going to prevail. So the main tool that Batei Din had to figure out who's right, who's wrong, who's telling the truth, was a shavua. Today, Beis Din does not administer shavuos because of the Chaymer HaDavar, because there are people who were lax and were prepared to make a shavua even though it was inaccurate. So Beis Din does not administer shavuos today, which creates a problem, because we now have to paskin Dinei Torah without the primary tool of figuring out what happened. And that is why today, when you go to a Beis Din will make the parties mevar tainosov. They will interrogate them. They will cross-examine them. They will ask a lot of questions. They will play detective, if you will. This is all fairly new. It is very rare to find shuvos where the dayanim were really cross-examining the parties, because that was not the tzura. The ikar samchus was on a shvua. It is only today where we do not have that tool. Beis Din is forced to act more similar to how a court acts, ask questions, and try to determine on their own what truly happened. Although al pidin, you need edim, you need a shvua, there are strict rules of evidence. Beis Din can't just decide who they think is right, who they think is wrong. However, the same rush that says you can force someone to be mevar tainosav, you can force him to explain the basis for his claim, because otherwise we're afraid he's a rami. So what happens if a person pleads the fifth? Beis Din asks him a question. He says, my attorney advised me to plead the fifth. I don't want to answer because I'll incriminate myself. Now, again, the attorneys here are all making faces. Pleading the fifth works for criminal cases. It doesn't work for civil cases. But the Rosh Taka says, Enoch Rami. He says that once the halacha is, we can tell someone to be mevar tainosav, if a person refuses to answer a question to Beis Din, there is an umdana that he is hiding something. And Zok the Rosh, based on that umdana, even though we don't have edus, even though there's no shvua, even though you don't have the regular rules of evidence, once he's refusing to answer, the Beis Din can assume that he's hiding something. He can make an adverse inference, and the Beis Din has the right to be moitzi mamon based on such an umdana. So refusing to answer a question in Beis Din is never a good idea, because your Beis Din then has the right to essentially assume the worst and even to be moitzi mamon. Now, there is a discussion in general. What happens in a case? Now, there is a general discussion about what happens if you have a case where a first person comes in, he brings the aid in that he's owed $10,000. His case seems airtight, but the fellow is lacking credibility. And Beis Din is convinced that the person is lying through his teeth. So on one hand, we have Edim, Abishnei Edim Yalkam Davar. On the other hand, Beis Din has an umdana that something is wrong over here. The Edim are lying. Something doesn't add up over here. So over here, the Rambam writes that although the normal rules is Alpishnei Edim Yalkam Davar, however, if the Beis Din is a chosh of a Beis Din, and they are completely convinced that the fellow is lying, they have the right to be misalak themselves and say, we are not paskening. Although on paper, you should win, because the Edom are backing up your claim. Because we have an umdana, we're convinced that you're lying, that this is a fraud, we are not going to take part in this fraud, and we are not going to paskin. The Rosh adds they can go even a step further. They can write a letter to the nitva that you came to Beis Din, and although there are edim, the Beis Din determined that there's a ramoyus going on, there is some sort of fraud, and no Beis Din should deal with the case. Every Beis Din has to be misalak themselves. And that way, the Teveah will end up losing. He will not be able to be Moitzi Mammon, because no Beis Din will accept his claim. Now, this is when the Teveah is being dishonest. When the Nitva is being dishonest, there the Rambam basically says that to be misalak yourself is not an option. Because if you don't deal with it, the Nitva will win. He's the one holding on to the money. So there the Rambam says you have to bang away, you have to do drisha v'chakira, even though normally Badini Mamunus there's no chiv drisha v'chakira. In this case, Beis Din has to interrogate the witnesses and just do whatever they can until someone cracks, until they get to the bottom of it. If they can't, the Rosh says if it's a chosh of a Beis Din and they are completely convinced that there is Ramoyus involved, The Rosh says you can even be Moitzi Mamon. Without any proof, without any edus, the fact there's an umdana, that they have no suffix, they are convinced that it's that the fellow was lying, they could be Moitzi Mamon. Now in Halacha, this is brought down, but it's brought down that this is only true until the Zman of the Gemara. Afterwards, once there was a proliferation of Batei Din that were not qualified, Batei Din that did not act L'shem Shamayim, so then there was a haskama that Batei Din cannot exercise this right, and they could only be Moitzi Mamon, and they can only rule based on Eidos, based on a Shvua, based on the halachic rules of evidence. Nevertheless, although this is what's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, the later Achrayim, the Tashbei, Tishvas Yaakov, and others, in extreme situations where they had no doubt that there was hanky panky going on, where they were completely convinced that there was Ramos, there are number of tshuvas where either they were Moitzi Mamon with the Umdana alone, or interestingly enough, in some cases they did not want to be Moitzi Mamon because there was no Eidos. But they were confident enough that they took the fellow and they tortured him. They either threw him into jail or in certain cases, they various methods of torture. Waterboarding is not quoted, actually. But they would torture them until they were moida that it was baloney, until they were moida that they brought out the stolen goods, until they were moida ala emes. Now, I'm not sure why they were not ready to be moitzi mamon, but they were ready to torture the person. One would think that it is either easier to make a person pay than it is to be choyvul by, to beat the daylights out of him. It's mistavro, although again, it's not discussed, but it's mistavro. It was because of the zilusa de beidina, that when you force the person to confess, at least at the end of the day, he's moida, I did steal it. He shows you where the stash of goods are. At that point, it's clear to everyone. Everyone sees the bezin is right, and they know they acted al pidin. Mashenkin, if you would just, force him to pay up without getting him to confess, then already there's more room for chashashas on the bezin. But be that as it may, in extreme cases, the bezin has this right to use their umdana. In practice today, when you go to a bezdin, buried somewhere in the shtabrun, in the arbitration agreement, is generally a clause that allows bezdin to use their hashara sadas. You allow bezdin to use their umdanas, and heyos, the parties are specifically authorizing the bezdin to use their judgment. They would have the right to do it, even though medina de gemara, medina de shulchan aruch, you can't do it after the stima statamu. It is a right that Bezdin will use sparingly. It's bidinehem, the concept is the person with the preponderance of evidence will prevail. Halacha, the rule is generally hamoitzi mekadeo avaraya. So the fact that there is a suspicion or it sounds funny will not be enough. It's only when there is a clear umdana, where the Bezdin has very solid reason to believe the fellow was lying, this ramos, then they will exercise this right of using their imen hadas. But if there's a real suffix, even if it's mistavra one way or another, there the rule is maitzu b'chadei avaraya. They will not use circumstantial evidence. It's only in these extreme cases where there is very strong evidence of ramois, of fraud going on. When the parties finish their claims, there's a halacha that Bezdin has to summarize the tainas before they finish. In other words, you go through the entire, took 3 days of taina, 20 hours of back and forth. Before they end the case, Bezdin will have a summary, what Reuven's tainas were, what Shimon's tainas were. Now, when this is done, it's not a chazor sashir. The Bezdin doesn't spend 20 hours rehashing each and every argument that was made. But the point is just to summarize in a nutshell what the basic claims and the basic arguments were. The idea of this is twofold. The first is for the Dayanim themselves, being forced to summarize a very succinct, clear summary of what the claims are forces the Bezdin to be very clear of what the arguments are. In addition, it gives the parties confidence that the Batei Din understood them. One of the biggest problems or that people have with Bezdin is people will come, they'll make their claims, they'll lose the case, they'll walk away, I know I was right, I made the claims, I lost it entirely, it must be that they didn't understand what I said. So the fact that before the end of the session, the Dayanim in their own words repeat back what the arguments were, that already gives the Balei Din confidence that the Bezdin understood it. Now they disagreed with me, they passed it against me, but at least at that point, they understood what the arguments were. Now just one last halacha, which is extremely important, I'd just like to go through briefly, and that is, there's an isser for a Bezdin to, or a Dayan, to paskin for one side without the other. Whenever you have a shaila in dinei mamis, if you have a shaila in aruch chaim or yoredeya, it's your shaila. You call a rav, you get a psak, and you listen to him. Chayish mishpat by definition involves two parties. And Chayish mishpat by definition, there's a tayin, there's a nitan. There are always two sides of the story. There's a reason why there's a malchikas, because the two of you either have a different set of facts, different perceptions, and therefore a dayan cannot paskin for one side over the other. Now, this is true in the context of a din Torah. If you have a din Torah and there's any ex parte communication, one of the parties speaks to a dayan or to the Beis Din zesh without the other party present. So b'dinehem, ex parte communication will invalidate a psak din. But in halacha as well, it is usur for a dayan to hear one party's claim without the other party being present. Whether it pashas, it will not passel the psak b'dieved, but certainly the chachilu, there's an isur, and many say it's doiraisa, to hear one claim without the other. Now, so much so, the Sma writes that if you have a din Torah, and he says that the case over there is that a Talmud has a din Torah, and they're going to the Rebbe, so the Talmud cannot go ahead to the Rebbe's house before the other Baal Din. Because the other Baal Din will show up to the din Torah, he'll knock on the door, he'll walk in, he'll see the Talmud is already there with the Dayan, so he's going to be choshed that the Talmud already discussed the case of the Dayan, and there will be seis and tainayisav. Now, based on that, if you go to a Beis Din, if one party shows up early or one party is there before the other, generally they will not allow the party into the room or to sit down, because then when the other party comes in, they walk into the room, they see the dayanim are sitting there with the other baal din. We have this chashash, maybe there was a discussion, maybe you already heard the claim, and that creates a seis and tainayisav. So if you ever go to a din Torah, this happens all the time. People will come to my house and they'll knock on the door, and I'll tell them that if it's just one party, I'll ask them to wait in the car. It's somewhat rude, but you explain to them that if you come into the office and you're sitting there, the other party comes, you're already sitting in the room with the other baal din, then already it leads to chashashos, and that's why that should be avoided. What very often happens is a person will have a shaila, and he'll call a rav. He's not going to a din Torah, he just wants to ask a shaila. Here also the halach is you should not answer one party to a dispute, because you are not getting the full picture, you're only getting one side of the story. So to halacha mufureshes, a dayan is not allowed to answer. And I cannot tell you how many problems are caused when a person has a sichsuch, one person or both of them call their rav says that they're right. Of course the rav said they're right. They only heard one side of the story. They only heard, even if the person is trying to be honest, but they only heard their version, and that's why they agreed with him. You cannot paskin chayshin mishpat, but unless you have both parties there. Now, you have many cases where one party tells the other, listen, I trust you. You go ask your Rav Ashayla, and whatever he says, we'll do. Now, even in those cases, in Al-Pidin, or at least Pashas and Shulchan Aruch, you should not be answering. In general, I will tell you that when a Rav hears one side of the story, basically, it's a lose-lose situation. Because if, based on your story, you're wrong, the Rav might tell you, okay, you're wrong. Just drop it, give in to the other person. If you're right, the Rav is going to be very reluctant to tell you you're right. Because they know good and well they're not hearing the full story. So if you're wrong, you're going to hear that you're wrong. If you're right, they're probably just not going to answer you and tell you you have to go to a bez and you have to go with both of you together. So calling without the other party is just a lose-lose situation. Where it gets questionable is what happens if you get a phone call where if someone has a shaila, we're not going to a din Torah. I just want to know for myself, is this right or is this wrong? So al-pidin, in Shulchan Aruch, you should not answer, because we're choshish that if you say the fellow is wrong, then if the other person tries to bring him to a din Torah, he knows he's going to lose, so he will now avoid a din Torah. And therefore, by telling him that he's wrong, you're going to create problems. Secondly, if you tell him that he's wrong, he might just modify his claim. When he shows up to a din Torah, he'll change the story because he knows that the original story he will lose on. And therefore, in Shulchan Aruch, it's brought down that you should not answer at all. That being said, many of the tshuvos, there are, the hanhaga of poskim, at least in some cases, was to answer. It's very much a judgment call. If you believe that the person who's asking you the question is not going to abuse it, if he's wrong, he's going to just settle with the person, then dayanim will answer. They'll make it clear it's not a psak din. They'll make it clear that it's just an intim tzolaymer. But in certain limited cases where they feel to tayelis, they will have some discussion or some about what happened. But in general, they can never pass them because they didn't hear both sides. And even in Imtim Tzolaymer, even to give a theoretical answer, The default is not to do it. It's only in specific cases where it's a tayelis, where either it's a dvar iser, or if you know the person, you know he's going to be mevater if you say that he's wrong. In limited cases, the bezin will answer, but in general, if it's zesh le b'fnei zeh, they will pass. They will not give a psak din.